predecessor, Sir Makin said. I hope to fulfil my duties more to the king's pleasing. I had not seen Sir Graham since the attack on our coach. I suspected that the incident cost the former captain of the guard rather more than it cost Count Renner. Let us hope so, I said. Makin ran a hand through his hair, dark and beaded with sweat from the heat of the day. He had a slightly fleshy face, expressive, but you wouldn't mistake him for someone without metal.
Won't you join us, Prince Georg? A good right feint will serve you better in times of trouble than any amount of book learning, he grinned. If your wounds are recovered sufficiently, of course.
Lundis settled a hand on my shoulder. The prince is still troubled by his injuries. He fixed those two blue eyes of his on Sir Makin. You might consider reading Proximus's thesis on the defence of royals. If you wish to avoid Sir Graham's fate, that is. It's in the library. He moved to steer me away. I resisted on nothing more than principle.
I think the prince knows his own mind, tutor.
Sir Makin flashed Lundis a broad smile.
Your Proximus can keep his advice. A knight trusts in his own judgment and the weight of his sword.
Sir Makin took a wooden sword from the cart on his left and offered it to me, hilt first.
Come, my prince, let's see what you've got. Care to spar against young Stodd here?
He pointed out the smallest of the squires, a slight lad, maybe a year my senior.
Him!
I pointed to the biggest of them, a hulking lout of 15 with a shock of ginger hair. I took the sword. Sir Makin raised an eyebrow and grinned all the wider.
Robart! You'll fight Robart, will you now?
He strode to the boy's side and clapped a hand to the back of his neck.
This here is Robart Hool, third son of the House of Arn. Of all this sorry lot, he's the one who might have a chance to earn his spurs one day. Got himself away with the blade as our Master Hool?
He shook his head.
Try Stodd.
Try none of them, Prince Georg.
Lundis kept the irritation from his voice almost.
This is foolishness. You are not yet recovered.
He shot a look at the grinning guard captain.
King Olidan will not take kindly to a relapse in his only heir.
Sir Makin frowned at that, but I could see it had gone too far for his pride to let him take instruction.
Go easy on him, Robart. Really easy.
If this ginger oaf doesn't do his level best, I'll make sure the closest he gets to being a knight is clearing the horse dung after the joust, I said. I advanced on the squire, my head craned to look him in the face. Sir Makin stepped between us, a training sword in his left hand.
A quick test first, my prince. I've got to know you've enough of the basics not to get yourself hurt.
The point of his blade clacked against mine and slipped away, angled for my face. I slapped it aside and made a half lunge. The knight tamed my thrust easily enough. I tried to slide to his guard, but he cut to my legs and I barely held him.
Not bad, not bad, he inclined his head. You've had decent instruction, he pursed his lips. You're what, 12?
10. I watched him return the trainer to the cart. He was right-handed.
All right.
Sir Makin motioned the squires into a circle around us.
Let's have us a duel, Robart. Show the prince no mercies. He's good enough to lose without serious injury to anything but his pride.
Robart squared up to me, all freckles and confidence. The moment seemed to come into focus. I felt the sun on my skin, the grit between the soles of my shoes and the flagstones. Sir Makin held his hand up.
Wait for it.
I heard the silver voices of the skylarks, invisible against the blue vaults above us. I heard the flapping of the execution flag.
Fight!
The hand dropped. Robart came in fast, swinging low. I let my sword fall to the ground. His blow caught me on the right side, just below the ribs. I'd have been cut in two, if it hadn't been made of wood. But it was. I hit him in the throat, at the edge of my hand, an eastern move that Lundis had showed me.
Robart went down as if a wall had dropped on him. I watched him writhe, and for an instant I saw Inch in the healing hall, on his hands and knees, with the fire all around us, and the blood pulsing from his back. I felt the poison in my veins, the hooks in my flesh, the simple need to kill, as pure an emotion as I have ever known. No! I found Lundis's hand on my wrist, stopping me as I reached for the boy. It's enough. It's never enough. Words in my head, spoken by a voice not my own, a voice remembered from the briar and the fever bed. For several moments, we watched the lad choke on the floor and turn crimson. The strangeness left me. I picked up my sword and returned it to Sir Makin. Actually, Proximus is yours, Captain, not Lundist's, I said. Proximus was a Borthan scholar, 7th century. One of your ancestors. Perhaps you should read him after all. I'd hate to have nothing but Robart here, and his judgment, between me and my enemies. But... Sir Makin chewed his lip. He seemed to have run out of objections after but. He cheated! Young Stodd found the words for all of them. Lundis had already started walking. I turned to follow him, then looked back. It's not a game, Sir Makin. You teach these boys to play by the rules, and they're going to lose. It's not a game. And when we make a mistake, we can't buy our way out of it. Not with horses. Not with gold. We reached the red gate on the far side of the courtyard. That boy could die, Lundis said. I know, I said. Take me to see these prisoners that father's to have killed.
Chapter 12, 4 years earlier. More of the tall castle lies below the ground than above. It should be called the Deep Castle, really. It took us a while to reach the dungeons. We heard the shrieks from a level up, through walls of builder stone.
This visit is perhaps a bad idea, Lundis said, pausing before an iron door.
It's my idea, tutor, I said. I thought you wanted me to learn by my mistakes. Another scream reached us, guttural, with a hoarse edge to it, an animal sound.
Your father wouldn't approve of this visit, Lundis said.
He pressed his lips in a tight line, troubled. That's the first time you've called on father's wisdom to resolve an issue. Shame on you, Tutor Lundist. Nothing would turn me back now.
There are things that children...
Too late. That horse already bolted. Stable burned. I brushed past him and rapped on the door with the hilt of my dagger. Open up! A rattle of keys and the door slid inward on oiled hinges. The wave of stench that hit me nearly took my breath. A warty old fellow in warder's leathers leaned into view and opened his mouth to speak. Don't, I said, holding the business end of my dagger toward his tongue. I walked on, Lundist at my heels.
You always told me to look and make my own judgment, Lundist, I said. I respected him for that. No time to get squeamish.
Jorg.
He was torn. I could hear it in his voice. Racked between emotions I couldn't understand and logic that I could.
Prince!
The cry rang out again, much louder now. I'd heard the sound before. It pushed at me, trying to force me away. The first time I heard that kind of pain, my mother's pain, something held me back. I'll tell you it was the hook briar which held me fast. I'll show you the scars. But in the night, before the dreams come, a voice whispers to me that it was fear that held me back, terror that rooted me in the briar, safe, while I watched them die. Another scream, more terrible and more desperate than any before. I felt the hooks in my flesh.
Jorg!
I shook Lundist's hands from me and ran toward the sound. I didn't have far to run. I pulled up short at the entrance to a wide room, torch lit, with cell doors lining three sides. At the centre, two men stood on opposite sides of a table, to which a third man had been secured with chains. The larger of the two warders held an iron poker, one end in a basket of glowing coals. None of the three noted my arrival, nor did any of the faces pressed to the barred windows in the cell doors turn my way. I walked in. I heard Lundist arrive at the entrance and stopped to take in the scene as I had. I drew close, and the warder without the iron glanced my way. He jumped as if stung.
What in the...
He shook his head to clear his vision.
Who? I mean...
I'd imagine the torturers would be terrifying men, with cruel faces, thin lips, hooked noses, the eyes of soulless demons. I think I found their ordinariness more of a shock. The shorter of the two looked a touch simple, but in a friendly way. Mild, I'd call him.
Who are you?
This one had a more brutish cast to him. But I could picture him at ale, laughing, or teaching his son pitchball. I hadn't any of my court weeds on, just a simple tunic for the schoolroom. There was no reason for warders to recognize me. They would enter the vaults through the villain's gate, and had probably never walked in the castle above. I'm Jorg, I said, in a servant's accent. My uncle paid old Warpface at the door to let me see the prisoners. I pointed toward Lundist. We're going to the executions tomorrow. I wanted to see criminals close up first. I wasn't looking at the warders now. The man on the table held my gaze. I'd seen only one black skin before, a slave to some noble visiting father's court from the south. But that man was brown. The fellow on the table had skin blacker than ink. He turned his head to face my way, slow as if it weighed like lead. The whites of his eyes seemed to shine in all that blackness.
Warpface! I like that.
The big warder relaxed and took up his irons again.
If there's two ducats in it for me and Grebin here, then I reckon you can stay and watch this fella squeal.
Beric, it don't seem right.
Grebin furrowed his broad forehead.
He's a young'un and all.
Beric pulled the poker from the coals and held it toward Grebin.
You don't want to stand between me and a ducat, my friend.
The black man's naked chest glistened below the glowing point. Ugly burns marked his ribs, red flesh erupting like new ploughed furrows. I could smell the sweet stench of roasted meat.
He's very black, I said.
He's a Nuban, is what he is,
Beric said, scowling. He gave the poker a critical look and returned it to the fire.
Why are you burning him? I asked.
I didn't feel easy under the Nuban's scrutiny. The question puzzled them for a moment. Grebin's frown deepened.
He's got the devil in him, Beric said at last. All them Nubans have. Heathens, the lot of them. I heard that Father Gomst, him as leads the king himself in prayer, says to burn the heathen.
Beric laid a hand on the Nuban's stomach, a disturbingly tender touch.
So we're just crisping this one up a bit. Before the king comes to watch him killed on the morrow.
Executed,
Grebin pronounced the word with the precision of one who has practiced it many times.
Executed, killed, what's the difference? They all end up for the worms.
Beric spat into the coals. The Nuban kept his eyes on me. A quiet study. I felt something I couldn't name. I felt somehow wrong for being there. I ground my teeth together and met his gaze.
What did he do? I asked.
Do?
Grebin snorted.
He's a prisoner.
His crime? I asked.
Beric shrugged.
Getting caught.
Lundis spoke from the doorway.
I believe, Jorg, that all the prisoners for execution are bandits, captured by the army of the march. The king ordered the action to prevent raids across the Lichway into Norwood and other protectorates.
I broke my gaze from the Nubans and let it slide across the marks of his torture. Where the skin remained unburned, patterns of raised scars picked out symbols, simple in design but arresting to the eye. A soiled loincloth hung across his hips. His wrists and ankles were bound with iron shackles, secured with a basic pinlock. Blood oozed along the short chains, anchoring them to the table.
Is he dangerous? I asked.
I moved close. I could taste the burned meat.
Yes.
The Nuban smiled as he said it, his teeth bloody.
You shut your heathen hole, you!
Beric yanked the iron from the coals. A shower of sparks flew up as he lifted the white-hot poker to eye level. The glow made something ugly of his face. It reminded me of a wild night when the lightning lit the faces of Count Renna's men. I turned to the Nuban. If he'd been watching the iron, I'd have left him to it. Are you dangerous? I asked him.
Yes.
I pulled the pin from the manacle on his right wrist. Show me. Chapter 13, 4 years earlier. The Nuban moved fast, but it wasn't his speed that impressed. It was his lack of hesitation. He reached for Beric's wrist. A sudden heave brought the warder sprawling across him. The poker in Beric's outstretched hand skewered Grebin through the ribs, deep enough so that Beric lost his grip on it as Grebin twisted away. Without pause, the Nuban lifted himself halfway to sitting, as close to upright as his manacled wrist could let him. Beric slid down the Nuban's chest, sliding on sweat and blood into his lap. He started to raise himself. The Nuban's descending elbow put an end to the escape attempt. It caught Beric on the back of the neck, and bones crunched. Grebin screamed, of course, but screams were common enough in the dungeon. He tried to run, but somehow lost his sense of direction and slammed into a cell door. With enough force to drive the point of the poker out below his shoulder blade. The impact knocked him over, and he didn't get up again. He twisted for a moment, mouthing something, with only wisps of smoke or steam escaping his lips. A cheer went up from those cells containing occupants too stupid to know when to stay silent. Lundist could have run. He had plenty of time. I expected him to go for help, but he was halfway to me by the time Grebin hit the ground. The Nuban pushed Beric clear and freed his other wrist. Run! I shouted at Lundist, in case it hadn't occurred to him. Actually, he was running, only in the wrong direction. I knew the years lay less heavy on him than an old man had a right to expect, but I didn't think he could sprint. I moved to put the table and the Nuban between Lundist and me. The Nuban unpinned both ankles as Lundist reached him.
Take the boy, old man, and go.
He had the deepest voice I'd ever heard. Lundis fixed the Nuban with those disconcerting blue eyes of his. His robes settled, forgetting the rush from the doorway. He held hands to his chest, one atop the other. If you go now, man of Nuba, I will not stop you. That brought a scatter of laughter from the cells. The Nuban watched Lundist with the same intensity I'd seen earlier. He had a few inches on my tutor, but it was the difference in bulk that made it seem a contest between David and Goliath. Where Lundist stood slender as a spear, the Nuban had as much weight again, and more, corded into thick slabs of muscle over heavy bone. The Nuban didn't laugh at Lundist. Perhaps he saw more than the prisoners did.
I'll take my brothers with me.
Lundis chewed on that, then took a pace back. Jorg, here. He kept his gaze on the Nuban. Brothers? I asked. I couldn't see any black faces at the bars. The Nuban gave a broad smile.
Once I had hut brothers. Now they are far away. Maybe dead.
He spread his arms, the smile becoming half grimace as he felt his burns.
But the gods have given me new brothers. Road brothers. Road brothers.
I rolled the words across my tongue. An image of Will flickered in my mind. Blood and curls. There was power here. I felt it.
Kill them both and let me out.
A door to my left rattled, as if a bull were worrying at it. If the speaker matched his voice, there was an ogre in there. You owe me your life, Nuban, I said.
Yes.
He jerked the keys from Beric's belt and stepped toward the cell on my left. I stepped with him, keeping him between Lundist and myself.
You'll give me a life in return, I said.
He paused, glancing at Lundist.
Go with your uncle, boy.
You'll give me a life, brother,
or I'll take yours as forfeit, I said. More laughter from the cells, and this time the Nuban joined in.
Who do you want killed, little brother?
He set the key in the lock. I'll tell you when we see him, I said. To specify Count Renner now would raise too many questions.
I'm coming with you.
Lundist rushed forward at that. He pivoted past the Nuban, delivering a kick to the back of his knee. I heard a loud click as the black man went down. The Nuban twisted as he fell and lunged for Lundist. Somehow the old man evaded him, and when the Nuban sprawled at his feet, Lundist kicked him in the neck, a blow that cut off his oath and left him limp on the stone floor. I almost skipped free, but Lundist's fingers knotted in my hair as it streamed behind me.
Jorg, this is not the way.
I fought to escape, snarling, it's exactly the way. And I knew it to be true. The wildness in the Nuban, the bonds between these men, the focus on what will make the difference, no matter what the situation, all of it echoed in me. From the corner of my eye, I caught sight of the cell door opening. The click had been the key turning. Lundist held my shoulders and made me face him.
You've no place with these men, Jorg. You can't imagine the life they lead. They don't have the answers you want.
He had such intensity to him, I could almost believe he cared. A figure emerged from the cell, stooping to come through the doorway. I'd never seen a man so big. Not Sir Geraint of the Table Guard, not Shem the Stable Hand, nor the wrestlers from the Slavs. The man came up behind Lundist, quick, a rolling storm.
Jorg, you think I don't understand?
The sweep of a massive arm cut off Lundist's words and sent him to the stone floor with such force, I'd have winced even if he hadn't taken a handful of my hair with him. The man towered over me, an ugly giant in stinking rags, with his hair hanging down in matted curtains. The scale of him mesmerized me. He reached for me, and I moved too slow. The hand that caught me could almost close around my waist. He lifted me level with his face, and his filthy mane parted as he looked up.
Jeez, you! But you're one hideous offense to the eye!
I could tell he was going to kill me, so no point in being tactful.
I can see why the king wants to execute you.
Even from the anonymity of the cells, the laughter was hesitant. Not a man to mock, then. Nothing soft in his face, just brute lines, scar, and the jut of bone beneath coarse skin. He lifted me, as if to dash me on the stone, like throwing down an egg.
No!
I could see under the giant's arm, an old man and a red-haired youth had followed him out, and were now helping the Nuban to his feet.
No,
the Nuban said again.
I owe him a life, Brother Price, and besides, without him, you'd still be in that cell, waiting on the pleasures of the morrow.
Brother Price gave me a look of impersonal malice, and let me fall as though I'd ceased to exist.
Let them all out,
he growled the words. The Nuban gave the keys to the old man, Brother Elben. Then he came across to where I'd landed. Lundist lay close by, face to the floor, blood pooling around his forehead.
The gods sent you, boy, to loose me from that table.
The Nuban glanced at the torture rack, then at Lundist.
You come with the brothers now. If we find the man you want dead, I kill him. Maybe.
I narrowed my eyes. I didn't like that, maybe. I looked to Lundist for a moment. I couldn't tell if he was still breathing. I sensed a ghost of the guilt I should perhaps have felt. The itch from an amputated limb, still niggling though the flesh has long since gone. I stood beside the Nuban, with Lundist at my feet, and watched as the outlaws released their comrades. I found myself staring into the orange heat of the coals, remembering. I remembered a time when I lived in the lie. I lived in a world of soft things, mutable truths, gentle touches, laughter for its own sake. The hand that pulled me from the carriage that night,
from the warmth of my mother's side, into a night of rain and screaming. That hand pulled me out by a doorway that I can't go back through. We all of us pass through that door, but we tend to exit of our own volition, and by degrees, sniffing the air, torn and tentative. In the days following my escape and illness, I saw my old dreams grow small and wither. I saw my child's life yellow on the tree and fall. As if a harsh winter had come to haunt the spring. It was a shock to see how little my life had meant. How mean the dens and forts in which William and I had played with such fierce belief. How foolish our toys without the intensity of an innocent imagination to animate their existence. Every waking hour I felt an ache, a pain that grew each time I turned the memory over in my hand. And I returned to it time and again, like a tongue to the socket of a missing tooth, drawn by the absence. I knew it would kill me. The pain became my enemy. More than the Count Renner, more than my father's bartering with lives he should have held more precious than crown or glory, or Jesus on the cross. And because in some hard core of me, in some stubborn trench of selfish refusal, I could not, even at 10 years of age, surrender to anything or anyone. I fought that pain. I analyzed its offensive and found its lines of attack. It festered, like the corruption in a wound turned sour, drawing strength from me. I knew enough to know the remedy. Hot iron for infection, cauterize, burn, make it pure. I cut from myself all the weakness of care. The love for my dead I put aside. Secure in a casket, an object of study, a dry exhibit, no longer bleeding, cut loose, set free. The capacity for new love. I burned out. I watered it with acid until the ground lay barren and nothing there would sprout, no flower take root. Come! I looked up. The Nuban was speaking to me. Come, we're ready. The brothers were gathered around us in ragged and ill-smelling array. Price had one of the warder's swords. The other gleamed in the hand of a second giant of a man, just a shade shorter, a shade lighter, a shade younger, and so similar in form that he could only have been squeezed from the same womb as Price.
We're going to cut a way out of here.
Price tested the edge of his sword against the short beard along his jawline.
Bolo, up front with Ryke and me. Gempt and Elbin, take the rear. The boy slows us down. Kill him.
Price threw a look around the chamber, spat, and made for the corridor. The Nuban put a hand on my shoulder.
You should stay, he nodded to Lundest. But if you come, don't fall behind.
I looked down at Lundest. I could hear the voices telling me to stay, familiar voices, but distant. I knew the old man would walk through fire to save me, not because he feared my father's wrath, but just because. I could feel the chains that bound me to him. The hooks. I felt the weakness again. I felt the pain seeping through cracks I'd thought sealed. I looked up at the Nuban. I won't fall behind, I said. The Nuban pursed his lips, shrugged, and set off after the others. I stepped over Lundest and followed. Assassination is just murder with a touch more precision. Brother Sim is precise. Chapter 14. So we rode out from Norwood. The peasants watched us, all sullen and dazed, and Ryke cursed them. As if it had been his idea to keep them from a Renner bonfire, and now they owed him a cheer as he left. We left them the ruins of their town, decorated with the corpses of the men that ruined it. Poor compensation, especially after Ryke and the brothers had stripped the dead of anything of worth. I reckoned we could make Krath City by nightfall, riding hard, and be banging on the gates of the tall castle before the moon rose. I shouldn't have been turning for home, picking up my old ways, and thinking once more about vengeance upon the Count of Renner. That's what instinct told me. But today, instinct spoke with an old and dry voice, and I no longer trusted it. I wanted to go home, perhaps because it felt as though something else required that I did not. I wanted to go home, and if hell rose up to stop me, it would make me desire it the more. We took the castle road up through the garden lands of Ancrath. Our path ran alongside gentle streams, between small woods and quiet farms. I'd forgotten how green it was. I'd grown used to a world of churned mud, burned fields, smoke-grey skies, and the dead rotting on the ground. The sun found us, pushing its way through high cloud. In the warmth, our column slowed until the clatter of hooves broke into lazy thuds. Gerard paused, where a three-bar gate led through the hedgerow. Beyond it, a field golden with wheat rolled out before us. He tore at the long grass around the gatepost. It felt as if God had poured honey over the land, sweet and slow, holding everything at peace. Norwood lay 15 miles and 1,000 years behind us.
"Good to be back, eh, Jorg?"
Makin pulled up beside me. He leaned forward in his stirrups and drank in the air.
"Smells of home."
And it did. The scent of warm earth took me back. Back to times when my world was small and safe. "I hate this place," I said. He looked shocked at that. And Makin was never an easy man to shock. "It's a poison men take willingly, knowing it will make them weak." I gave Gerard my heels and let him hurry up the road. Makin caught me up and cantered alongside. We passed Reich and Burlow at the crossroads, throwing rocks at a scarecrow.
"Men fight for their homeland, Prince," Makin said. "It's the land they defend, the king and the land."
I turned to holler at the stragglers.
"Close the line!"
Makin kept pace, waiting for an answer. "Let the soldiers die for their land," I said to him. "If the time comes to sacrifice these fields in the cause of victory, I'll let them burn in a heartbeat. Anything that you cannot sacrifice pins you, makes you predictable, makes you weak." We rode on at a trot, west, trying to catch the sun. Soon enough, we found the garrison at Chelney Ford. Or rather, they found us. The watchtower must have seen us on the trail, and 50 men came out along the castle road to block our way. I pulled up a few yards short of the pikemen, strung across the road in a bristling hedge double-ranked. The rest of the squad waited behind the pike wall, with drawn swords, save for 12 archers arrayed amongst the corn in the field to our right. A score of heifers in the field opposite saw our approach and idled over to investigate.
"Men of Chelney Ford," I called out. "Well met. Who leads here?"
Makin came up behind me, the rest of the brothers trailing in after him, easy in their saddles. A tall man stepped forward between 2 pikemen, but not too far forward. No idiot, this one. He wore the Ancrath colours over a long chain shirt and an iron pot helm low on his brow. To my right, 12 sets of white knuckles strained on bowstrings. To my left, the heifers watched from behind the hedge, complacent and chewing on the cud.
"I'm Captain Coddin."
He had to raise his voice as one of the cows let out a low moo.
"The king signs mercenaries at Relston Fair. Armed bands are not permitted to roam into Ancrath. State your business."
He kept his eyes on Makin, looking for his answer there. I didn't care for being dismissed as a child, but there's a time and place for taking offence. Besides, old Coddin seemed to know his stuff. Putting Brother Gempt out of his misery was one thing, but wasting one of Father's captains quite another. I had my visor up already, so I used it to pull my helm off.
"Father Gompst,"
I called for the priest, and the brothers shuffled their horses aside with a few mutters to let the old fellow pass. He wasn't much to look at. He'd hacked off that beard he grew in the gibbet cage, but grey tufts still decorated his face in random clusters, and his priestly robes seemed more mud than cloth.
"Captain Coddin," I said, "do you know this priest, Father Gompst?"
Coddin raised an eyebrow at that. He had a pale face, and now it went paler. His mouth took on a hard edge, like a man who knows he's the butt of a joke that he hasn't worked out yet.
I, he said, the king's priest. He snapped his heels together and inclined his head, as if he were in court. It seemed funny out there in the road, with the birds tweeting overhead and the stink of the cows washing over us. Father Gompst, I said. Pray tell Captain Coddin who I am. The old fellow puffed himself up a bit. He'd been listless and grey since Norwood, but now he tried to find a crumb or two of authority.
Prince Honoris Jorg Ancrath sits before you, Captain. Lost and now returned, he's bound for his royal father's court, and you would do well to see that he gets there with proper escort.
He glanced at me, screwing up what courage he had behind the foolish remnants of his beard.
And a bath.
A little snigger went up at that, on both sides of our standoff. It doesn't pay to underestimate a cleric. They know the power of words, and they'll use them to their own ends. My palm ached for the hilt of my sword. I saw old Gompt's head falling from his shoulders, bouncing once, twice, and rolling to a halt by the hooves of a black-and-white heifer. I pushed the vision away. No bath. It's about time for a little road stink at court. Soft words and rosewater may please the gentry, but those that fight the war live dirty. I return to my father as a man who has shared the soldier's lot. Let him know the truth of it. I let my words carry on the still air and kept my eyes on Gompsty. He had the wit to look away. My speech earned no rousing cheer, but Coddin bowed his head, and we had no further mention of baths. A shame, truth be told, because I'd been looking forward to a hot tub ever since I decided to turn for home. So Coddin left his second to command the garrison and rode with us. His escort of 24 riders swelled our numbers to nearly 60. Makin carried a lance from the Ford Armory now, flying the Ancrath colours and royal crest. The garrison riders spread word through the villages as we passed. Prince Jorg, Prince Jorg, return from the dead. The news stole ahead of us, until each town presented a larger and better prepared reception. Captain Coddin sent a rider to the king before we left Chelney Ford. But even without his message, they would know of us in the tall castle well before we got there. At Bainstown, the bunting stretched across Main Street. 6 minstrels, sporting lute and clavichord, played the king's sword with more gusto than skill. Jugglers exchanged twirling firebrands, and a bear danced before the mill pond. And the crowds. People packed in so tight, we'd no hope of riding through. A fat woman in a tent of a dress, which was striped like a tawny pavilion, saw me amid the van. She pointed and gave a shriek that drowned the minstrels out.
Prince Jorg, the stolen prince!
The whole place went mad at that, cheering and crying. They surged forward like wild things. Coddin had his men in quick, though. I forgave him his earlier slight for that. If peasants had reached Reich, we'd have had red slaughter. On the Lich Road, the brothers were more scared, but that's the only time I've seen more fear in them than there at Bainstown. They none of them knew what to make of it. Grumlow's left hand never left his dagger. Red Kent grinned like a maniac, terror in his eyes. Still, they'd learn fast enough. When they figured out the welcome that lay ahead, when they'd seen the taverns and the whores, well, there'd be no dragging them out of Bainstown in a week. One of the minstrels found a horn, and a harsh note cut through the tumult. Guards, red-robed with black chain beneath, cleared a path. And no less a man than Lord Nosser of Elm emerged before us. I recognized the man from court. He looked slightly fatter in his gilded showplate and velvets, rather more grey in the beard spilling down over his breastplate. But pretty much the same jolly old Nosser who rode me on his shoulders once upon a time.
Prince Jorg!
The old man's voice broke for a moment. I could see tears shining in his eyes. It caught at me, that did. I felt it hook something in my chest. I didn't like it.
Lord Nosser,
I gave back, and let a smile curl my lip. The same smile I gave Gempt before I let him have my knife. I saw a flicker in Nosser's eyes then, just a moment of doubt. He rallied himself.
Prince Jorg, beyond all hope, you've returned to us. I cursed the messenger for a liar, but here you are.
He had the deepest voice, rich and golden. Old Nossa spoke, and you knew it was truth. You knew he liked you. It wrapped you up all warm and safe, that voice did.
Will you honor my house, Prince Jorg, and stay a night?
I could see the brothers exchanging glances, eyeing women in the crowd. The mill pond burned crimson with the dying sun. North, above the dark line of Rennet Forest, the smoke of Krath City stained a darkening sky.
My lord, it's a gracious invitation, but I mean to sleep in the tall castle tonight. I've been away too long, I said.
I could see the worry on him. It hung on every crag of the man's face. He wanted to say more, but not here. I wondered if father set him to detain me.
Prince!
He lifted a hand, his eyes seeking mine. I felt that hook in my chest again. He would set me down in his high hall and talk of old times in that golden voice. He'd speak of William and mother. If there was a man who could disarm me, Nossa was that man.
I thank you for the welcome, Lord Nossa.
I gave him court formality, curt and final. I had to haul on the reins to turn Jared. I think even horses liked Nossa. I led the brothers around by the river trail, trampling over some farmers' autumn turnips. The peasants cheered on, not sure what was happening, but cheering all the same. We came to the tall castle by the cliff path, avoiding the sprawl of Krath City. The lights lay below us. Streets beaded with torchlight, the glow of fire and lamp rising from windows not yet shuttered against the cool of the night. The watchman's lanterns picked out the old city wall, a skewed semicircle, tapering down to the river where the houses spilled out beyond the walls, into the valley, reaching out along the river. We came to the west gate, the one place we could reach the high city without trailing up through the narrow streets of the old city. The guards raised the portcullises for us, first one, then the next, then the next. 10 minutes of creaking windlass and clanking chain. I wondered why the three gates were down. Did our foes truly press so close? We must triple gate the high wall. The gate captain came out, whilst his men sweated to raise the last portcullis. Archers watched from the battlements high above. No bunting here. I recognized the man vaguely, as old as Gomst, salt and pepper hat. It was his sour expression I recalled best, pinched around the mouth, as if he'd just that moment sucked a lemon.
Prince Jorg, we are told.
He peered up at me, raising his torch almost to my face. Evidently, I had enough of the king's look about me to satisfy his curiosity. He lowered the torch fast enough and took a step back. I'm told I have my father's eyes. Maybe I do, though mine are darker. We could both give a stare that made men think again. I've always thought I looked too girlish, my mouth too much the rosebud, my cheekbones too high and fine. It's of no great consequence. I've learned to wear my face as a mask, and generally, I can write what I choose on it. The captain nodded to Captain Coddin. He passed his gaze over Macon without a flicker, missed Father Gomst in the crowd, and lingered instead on the Newbern, before casting a dubious eye over Reich.
I can find accommodation for your men in the Low City, Prince Jorg, he said.
By the Low City, he meant the sprawl beyond the walls of Old City. My companions can board with me at the castle, I said.
King Oladan requires only your presence, Prince Jorg, the gate captain said, and that of Father Gomst, and Captain Bortha, if he's with you.
Macon raised a mailed hand. Both the gate captain's eyebrows vanished up beneath his helmet that.
Macon Bortha? No.
One and the same, Macon said. He gave the man a broad grin, showing altogether too many teeth. Been a while, Rolkin, you old bastard. King Oladan requires...
No room for manoeuvre there. A polite little, get your road scum down to the slums. At least Relkin made it clear enough from the start, rather than letting me lose face by arguing the odds before overruling me with King Oladan requires.
Elben, take the brothers down to the river and find some rooms. There's a tavern, the Falling Angel. Should be big enough for you all, I said.
Elben looked surprised at having been chosen. Surprised but pleased.
He smacked his lips over his toothless gums and glared back at the rest of them.
You heard Jorth? Prince Jorth, I mean. Move it out.
Killing peasants is a hanging offence, I said as they turned their horses. Hear me, little Reiki? Even one. So no killing, no pillage, and no raping. You want a woman? Let the Count of Renner buy you one with his coin. Hell, let him buy you three. All three gates stood open. Captain Coddin, a pleasure. Enjoy your ride back to the ford, I said. Coddin bowed in the saddle and led his troops off. That left just me, Gomst, and Makin. Lead on, I said. And Gate Captain Relkin led us through the west gate into the high city. We had no crowds to contend with. The hour was well past midnight, and the moon rode high now. The wide streets of the high city lay deserted save for the occasional servant scurrying from one great house to the next. Maybe a merchant's daughter or two watched us from behind the shutters, but in the main, the noble houses slept sound and showed no interest in a returning prince. Gerard's hooves sounded too loud on the flagstones leading up to Tall Castle. 4 years ago, I left in velvet slippers, quieter than any mouse. The clatter of iron shoes on stone hurt my ears. Inside, a small voice still whispered that I'd wake father. Be quiet, don't breathe. Don't even let your heart beat. Tall Castle is, of course, anything but tall. In 4 years on the road, I had seen taller castles, even bigger castles, but never anything quite like Tall Castle. The place seemed at once familiar and strange. I remembered it as bigger. The castle may have shrunk from the unending vastness I'd carried with me in memory, but it still seemed huge. Tutor Lundist told me the whole place once served as foundations for a castle so tall it would scrape the sky. He said that when men first built this, all we see now lay under the ground. The roadmen didn't build Tall Castle, but those who did had artifice almost to equal that of the roadmen. The walls weren't quarry-hewn, but seemingly crushed rock that had once poured like water. Some magical set metal bars through the stone of the wall, twisted bars of a metal tougher even than the black iron from the east. So Tall Castle brooded squat and ancient, and the king sat within its metal-veined walls, watching over the high city, the old city, the low city, watching over the city of Krath and all the dominions of his line, my city, my castle. Chapter 15, 4 years earlier. We left the Tall Castle by the Brown Gate, a small door on the lower slopes of the mount, out past the high wall. I came last, with the ache of all those steps in my legs. Faint red footprints marked the top stair. The owners of that blood were probably still bleeding, far behind us. For a moment, I saw Lundist, lying as I'd left him. We'd climbed from the very bowels of the castle vaults to the least ostentatious of all the castle's exits. Dungmen came this way a dozen times a day, carrying off the treasures of the privy. And I'll tell you, royal shit stinks no less than any other. The brother ahead of me turned at the archway and showed me his teeth by way of a grin. Fresh air. Take a breath of that, castle boy. I'd heard the Nuban call this one Ro. A wire of a man, gristle and bone, old scars and a mean eye. I'll lick a leper's neck before I take a lungful of your stench, Brother Ro. I pushed past him. It'd take more than talking like a road brother to earn a place with these men, and giving an inch wasn't the way to start. Ancrath stretched out on our right. To the left, the smoke and spires of Krath City rose behind the old wall. A stormlight covered it all, the kind that falls when thunderclouds gather in the day. A flat light that makes a stranger of even the most familiar landscape. It felt appropriate.
We travel fast and we travel hard, Price said.
Price and Reich, the only true brothers among us, stood shoulder to shoulder at the head of the column, Reich beetling his brow while Price told us how it would be.
We put as many miles between us and this shithole as it takes. The storm will hide our tracks. We'll find horses as we go, roust a village or two if need be.
You think the king's hunters can't track 2 dozen men through a bit of rain?
I wished my voice didn't ring so pure and high as I said it. They all turned round at that. The Nuban flashed me a look, eyes wide, and patted down at the air as if to shut me up. I pointed to the sprawl of roofs edging toward the river, where father's loving citizens had built beyond the safety of the city walls in their passion to be near him. By ones and twos, a brother could find his way to a warm hearth. Bit of roast beef and an ale, maybe, I said. I hear there's a tavern or three to be found down there. A brother could be toasting by a fire before the rain even got to washing his trail away. The king's men would be riding back and forth on those fine horses of theirs, getting wet, looking for the kind of rut that 20 men put in a road or across a field, looking for the kind of trouble a band of brothers stirs up. And we'd be sitting comfortable in the shadow of the tall castle, waiting for the weather to clear. You think there's a man we left behind who could tell the criers what we look like? You think the good folk of Krath City will notice a score added to their thousands? I could see I'd won them. I could see the light of that warm hearth reflecting in their eyes.
And how the feck are we to pay for roast beef and a roof to hide under?
Price shoved through the brothers, setting the redhead Gempt on his rear.
Start robbing in the shadow of the tall castle?
Yeah, how we are gonna pay, castle boy? Gempt scrambled to his feet, finding me a better target than Price for his anger. How we gonna? I brought up two ducats from my purse and rubbed them together.
I'll take that.
A sharp-faced man to my left lunged for the purse, still fat with coin. I flipped the dagger from my belt and stuck it through his outstretched hand.
Liar,
I said. I shoved a little more until the hilt slapped up against his palm. The blade glistened red behind.
Out the way, liar!
Price grabbed him by the neck and tossed him down the slope. Price loomed over me. Any full-grown man loomed over me, but Price added a new dimension to it. He took a handful of my jerkin and hauled me up, eye to eye, careless of the bloody knife I still had hold of.
You're not scared of me, are you, boy?
The stink of him was something awful. Dead dog comes close. I thought about stabbing him, but I knew there wasn't a wound that would stop him breaking me in two before he died. Are you scared of me? I asked him. We had us a moment of understanding then. Price didn't so much as twitch, but I saw it in him, and he saw it in me. He let me fall.
We'll stay a day in a city, Price said. The drinks are on Brother Jorg. Any of you horse sons start trouble before we leave and I'll hurt you. Bad.
He held a hand out to me where I lay. I half reached for it, before understanding. I tossed the purse to him. I'll go with the Nuban, I said. Price nodded. A black face lost from the dungeons would be remembered. A black face found in a Krath tavern would be remarked on. The Nuban shrugged and set off, east toward the open fields. I followed. It wasn't until we'd lost ourselves in the maze of tracks and hedgerows that the Nuban spoke again.
You should be afraid of Price, boy.
The first breath of storm wind set the hawthorn rustling to either side. I could smell the electricity mixed in with the richness of the earth. Why? I wondered if he thought I lacked the imagination for fear. Some men are too dull to feel what might happen. Others torture themselves with maybes and populate their dreams with horrors more terrible than their worst enemy could inflict upon them.
Why would the gods care what happens to a child who doesn't care about himself?
The Nuban asked. He paused before a turn in the road and moved close to the hedge. The wind shook again and white petals fell among the thorns. He looked back along the way we'd come. Maybe I'm not afraid of the gods either, I said. Fat drops of rain began to land around us. The Nuban shook his head. Raindrops sparkled in the tight curls of his hair.
You're a fool to make a fist at the gods, boy.
He flashed me a grin and edged to the corner.
Who knows what they might send you?
Rain appeared to be the answer. It seemed to fall faster than normal, as if the sheer weight of water waiting to fall hurried the raindrops down. I moved in beside the Nuban. The hedge offered no shelter. The rain came through my tunic, cold enough to steal my breath. I thought then of the comforts I'd left behind. and wondered if perhaps I should have taken Lundist's counsel after all. "Why are we waiting?" I asked. I had to raise my voice above the roar of the rain. The Nuban shrugged.
"The road feels wrong."
"Feels more like a river. But why are we waiting?" He shrugged again.
"Maybe I need a rest."
He touched a hand to his burns, and a wince showed me his teeth, very white, where most of the brothers had a mouthful of grey rot. 5 minutes passed, and I kept my peace. We couldn't get wetter if we'd fallen down a well. "How did you all get taken?" I asked. I thought of Price and Reich, and the notion of them surrendering to the king's guard seemed somehow comical. The Nuban shook his head. "How?" I asked again, louder, above the rain. The Nuban glanced back along the road, then bent in close.
"A dream witch."
"A witch?" I made a face at him and spat water to the side.
"A dream witch," the Nuban nodded. "The witch came in our sleep and kept us tied in dreams while the king's men took us."
"Why?" I asked. If I took the witch seriously, and I didn't, I knew for certain that my father didn't employ any.
"I think he was seeking to please the king," the Nuban said.
He stood without announcement and set off through the mud. I followed, but I held my tongue. I'd seen children tag after grown men, throwing question after question. But I'd put childhood aside. My questions could wait, at least until the rain stopped. We sploshed along at a good pace for the best part of an hour before he stopped again. The rain had graduated from deluge to a steady soak that fell with the promise of lasting the night and through the next morning. This time our pause in the hedgerow proved well judged. 10 horsemen thundered by, kicking up mud left and right.
"Your king wants us back in his dungeons, Jorg."
"He's not my king anymore," I said. I made to stand, but the Nuban caught my shoulder.
"You left a rich life in the king's own castle, and now you're hiding in the rain."
He kept a close watch on me. He read too much with his eyes, and I didn't like it.
"Your uncle sacrificed himself to keep you safe. A good man, I think. Old, strong, wise. But you came."
He shook a clot of mud from his hand free. A silence stretched between us, the kind that invites you to fill it with confession. "There's a man I want dead." The Nuban frowned.
"Children shouldn't be this way."
The rain ran in trickles over the furrows on his brow.
"Men shouldn't be this way."
I shook loose and set off. The Nuban fell in beside me, and we covered another 10 miles before the light failed entirely. Our path took us by farmhouses and the occasional mill, but as night came, we saw a cluster of lights below a wooded ridge a little south of us. From memory of Lundist's maps, I guessed it to be the village of Pineacre, until now nothing more to me than a small green dot on old parchment. "A bit of dry would be nice." I could smell the wood smoke. All of a sudden, I understood how easily I'd sold the brothers my plan on the strength of warmth and food.
"We should spend the night up there."
The Nuban pointed to the ridge. The rain fell soft now. It wrapped us in a cold blanket that leached my strength away. I cursed my weakness. A day on the road had left me dead on my feet. "We could sneak into one of those barns," I said. 2 stood isolated, just below the tree line. The Nuban started to shake his head. In the east, thunder rumbled, low but sustained. The Nuban shrugged.
"We could."
The gods loved me. We made our way through fields turned half to swamp, stumbling in the darkness, me tripping over my exhaustion. The door to the barn groaned a protest, then squealed open as the Nuban heaved on it. A dog barked somewhere in the distance, but I doubted any farmer would dare the rain on the strength of a hound's opinion. We reeled in and fell into the hay. Each limb felt leaden. I would have sobbed with the tiredness if I'd let it have its way. "You're not worried the Dream Witch will come after you again?" I asked. "She's hardly going to be pleased if her present to the king has escaped." I stifled a yawn.
"He,"
said the Nuban.
I think it's a he.
I pursed my lips. In my dreams, the witches were always women. They'd hide in a dark room.